This meeting is being recorded.
And you're listening to another episode of Courageous Conversations with Cherie. I'm your girl, Cherie Darien. What's up, Savannah? We're so glad to be back here with you today for another episode and another amazing guest. But before we jump into that, let me jump into this and remind you, you're listening to WRUULP Savannah, Georgia, 107.5 FM, WRUU.org. We are Savannah Soundings Community Radio with Global. So yes, you heard it here. And without further ado, want to remind you that the viewpoints expressed in the following program are not necessarily that of WRUU, its staff, or its license holder. Okay, now we're taking care of business. Let's take care of business. Got ahead of myself there. Jessica, I'm so excited. Miss Jessica Stokes, are you on the line with me?
Yes, I am, Cherie, and I am so excited to be here today talking with you.
Awesome sauce. I love it. This is going to be fun. You know, it's interesting, considering our topic today, that I said that this is going to be fun. But I think, you know, it's all a matter of perspective. How do we leverage our journey? The good, the bad, the ugly, and the indifferent, the painful, all of it, right? How do we leverage that? So today, my love, I'm delighted to tell this amazing audience that we connected via Sierra.
Absolutely.
Right? Red Thread Publishing. Amazing. Another amazing guest that I had on who has actually extended this opportunity to several of her writers. So thank you. Shout out to Sierra.
Absolutely. And you are so right, Cherie. That whole thing about how we take something that happens in our life and something that's like a burden or negative or like downtrodden, and how we can shift it and really find some goodness in it and some, you know, extra amazing ways to move something from, you know, the yuck to the good. So that's totally what my book definitely explores.
Yeah.
Well, and yes, big shout out to Sierra and to you for hosting us and to extending the offer. It's such a great pleasure to be able to connect. And actually, one of my dad's best friends lives in Georgia, so I can't wait to share with him that I'm going to be on air. So
that's sweet.
Super amazing. So
excellent. Well, what's up to your dad's friend as well?
So
hey, you know what, Jessica, every time I get an amazing guest like you, I like to love on you, and that's my way of affectionately rolling out the red carpet and introducing you properly to our fabulous listening audience. I should say our very loyal listening audience out there. And so I'm going to read a bit of your bio just to let these folks know, well, what's up? Who is this Jessica lady, Cherie? Well, as we stated, she is a Red Thread writer who just published her book entitled Seeking Clarity in the Labyrinth, A Daughter's Journey Through Alzheimer's, which was actually done on January 10th. That date is significant, Savannah, because it's the 1-year anniversary of her mother's passing. This book explores Jessica's 13-year journey with Alzheimer's, tracking from the onset to her mom's passing. She uses the labyrinth as a tool to find peace and healing and a way of dealing with grief. Would you, Savannah, give a warm welcome to our guest of honor for the hour, Miss Jessica? I love that. Wow. What a journey. I'm sure it has been. Now, I'll tell you what comes up immediately, Jessica, for me when I hear that. I'm thinking loss of memory. Why don't you demystify, if you will, what Alzheimer's really is?
Sure. So Alzheimer's, first of all, I think Alzheimer's, everyone has, or many, many people have some sort of relationship to mm-hmm. someone that has not just Alzheimer's, but dementia too. Mm-hmm. So Alzheimer's is one disease within many that is under the sort of umbrella of dementia loss. So other things that often fall into that, Parkinson's is a neurological, they're all neurologically related. So a neurological shift in our brain, and specifically, often, usually, some different kind of form of memory loss. And certainly, there is some elements of we all, as we age, we all lose our memory some. Our memory changes as we get older. Alzheimer's and, again, dementia as the bigger umbrella are that significant or not normal types and ways in which we age and lose our, like we've all, you know, forgot where we put our keys or forgot where we, you know, can't find a name as easy. So those are like those things that are just generally, they're parts of our brain gets full of memories. They're hard to find those little things. And those, some of those things are going to happen as we age. Dementia and early onset Alzheimer's specifically are the increased, the quickening of that process and the significance of that progress, that it's like if our brain is a big old puzzle and we're taking away pieces of the puzzle and we're taking away those puzzle pieces at a faster rate than the normal process of aging.
Mm-hmm. You know, you and I have something in common. It's interesting, as I was reading a portion of your bio, how you were able to track the journey. 13 years for you. I had 12 weeks with my mother, and I lost her over 12 weeks, but it was actually two forms of cancer that we lost her to. Nonetheless, it is a journey.
Absolutely. And I, and what my book speaks to is certainly any loss, because a loss of 12 weeks with cancer, there is that same, all the same things happen in our journey and our process of processing grief and processing when we know we're going to lose, like when you got that cancer diagnosis, when we got the Alzheimer's diagnosis, you know, you're going to lose your mom.
Right.
And Alzheimer's, there are forms of Alzheimer's that go much quicker than 13 years. I have this parallel story in my book of my aunt who lost her, or we lost my aunt, I should say. But her journey was only over just over 2 years.
Yeah.
So her onset, and once we figured it out, and to her, the loss was just a much shorter journey. But all the journeys have a parallel path, that it's a journey and we're about to lose someone.
Yeah. That's interesting. I never really thought about it like that. As far as the time, it all seems too short. And when you're in the midst of it.
Yeah.
Jeez. Oh my. You know, this one word keeps coming up, obviously, as I'm reading through this, seeking clarity in the labyrinth. I really haven't really paid much of attention to that word. In fact, you made me go to Webster to look it up. Why did you land there?
Sure. So a labyrinth, there's a lot of different things of where that landed. But one of the parallel stories in my book, and there is a labyrinth. We need to unpack what labyrinth is. So a labyrinth is not a maze. So generally speaking, when we think of labyrinth, we often think of a maze. So labyrinths and the actual physical labyrinth, the pattern of a labyrinth, is actually a path that goes in and a path that goes out. And there are labyrinths that are all, we've seen labyrinths in history, going back to cave dwellings. Like, I mean, they've been around for a very, very long time. And they've been all, and then they've, there's been a sort of a renaissance, I guess, of labyrinths in the past, and in churches, and in, there's sort of a, in spiritual sinking people, sort of this use of this tool. And it's usually, and there's, they're in church floors, and there's in parks, and in they're large pathways that you can walk and have this sort of calming experience of walking in and out of a labyrinth path. And our personal, or my personal experience with it, is that my mom and my aunt built a labyrinth and became very interested in the late 90s with these structures, and sort of did some studying and read some books, and they got very into it, and they built one in my parents' house or in the backyard. And so we actually have, physically have this labyrinth structure, and there's great tools out there. There's labyrinths everywhere. I guarantee you there's a labyrinth in Savannah. Can probably find you. In fact, I'm going to find y'all an address while we're talking here, so y'all have one to go to. So we built one. So my parents built one.
Right.
Or my aunt and my mom built one with the support of my aunt, my uncle, and my dad. And we have this beautiful stone labyrinth in the natural setting of their house in Salida, Colorado. And when I started writing this book, I was struck by, one, my need and use. When I was helping my parents, that 13-year journey included a lot of visits to their house and support and help with them cleaning out closets, and really giving, you know, helping my dad physically figure out how the heck he was going to be able to support my mom, and then ultimately figure out how to live by himself. And when I was up there, every time I had to walk our labyrinth, and it became such this like grounding place for me to be, and to find some peace and some sense of love. And then there's this other interesting thing that happens, is that it feels sometimes like a maze. And when you're in the midst of it, like, you know, I know there's a path in and out, but there were times when I was there walking it with my parents, and I had this one time in which they would go first. So my dad would, usually he'd say, you go first. So he'd want me to start walking it first. And there's one path in, and then he would go next. And then he would have my mom follow him, or he would have her go and he would follow her. So sometimes it would go back and forth. Mm-hmm. And there is this one time, the way that the paths go back and forth and around, I was struck by how interesting it was, because there was times that I was following them in the circle, and then there's other times they were following me. And it was such this perfect metaphor of our life at the time. Like, we were in this crazy transition of who, and I was losing mom. I couldn't like talk to her about my kids or my life. And I was starting to be kind of take this role as parent with them.
So reverse roles.
So it became this like, and so then as I started writing this book, I was using that a lot in the storyline. So there's a lot of reference to it. And then it became clear that that's it. Like, that is the, you know, the title, and that's the, you know, what we were doing.
Wow. That's interesting.
Certainly. And I did find a labyrinth in Savannah, Georgia. Yeah. It's at Skidaway Island United Methodist Church. So
I'm writing it down.
Yeah. I'm going to check that out. And so, and Sheree, I'm going to get you like this, like, if you want to like share whatever, this link, I'll get it to you. So then you can like, it's really cool. Like, you can put in like whatever city and whatever, like, you know, whatever city you're in, you can type in the city and you can find if there's a labyrinth there. Like, it's the coolest thing.
Yeah. So yeah. Why did you write this book? You went through your own journey. That was a long journey.
Yeah.
13 years.
So in the middle of it, mm-hmm. I was at their house cleaning out their garage. There were certain things that I was, there was a bunch of different things that happened in the reason, like how I would go and clean out their house. And so one of the goal this one weekend was like, they have this garage and it's the, mm-hmm. There's winters enough that there's ice. And I knew that my goal was to clean out the garage so they could park their car in the garage that coming winter, because they had both at different times had fallen and slipped on the ice around the car. Mm-hmm. So I was cleaning out the garage and it was messy. And it, like, there's so many parts of the house that become cluttery. And again, that was this interesting reality of our life, but also metaphor that mom, she couldn't cognitively, it was early. Like, so we didn't like, she wasn't really losing her, or she was losing her memory, mm-hmm. but how it was manifesting was a lot of clutter. Like, there was clutter in the house, like more than there had ever been before. And like, she'd start a project and she couldn't organize it. She'd start to go through piles, but she would forget and not understand what she needed to throw away or what should be thrown away. And she'd buy extra stuff. They'd go to the grocery store and she couldn't remember that she had certain things at the house. So she'd buy more of the same stuff. So there was just like she couldn't keep it track. She knew she loved to cook with olive oil, so she'd buy another bottle of olive oil.
Mm-hmm.
We had a ton. Like, I threw away like 50 expired bottles of olive oil. It was really ridiculous. And so I'm in the garage and I'm cleaning mm-hmm. out different stuff. And there's like boxes of papers, and some of them were old Christmas cards, letters, whatever. And I found this box and I opened it up, and it was a letter that my mom had written my grandma.
Yeah.
And when she left home, when she was 18 years old, mm-hmm. and what the box was this entire box of letters that they spanned over 20, 25 years of that my mom had written to my grandma, and my grandma had saved them and given mm-hmm. them back to my mother, and my mother had them. And I was so struck that I found her voice in those letters. We're about halfway through Alzheimer's at that time.
Yeah.
And I heard, when I read the letters, I heard her, but I didn't hear her. I heard her when she was vibrant.
Right.
And I was so struck by it. And I brought this box of letters home and I was reading it. And I was just so like thrilled that I was reclaiming her. Mm-hmm. So I was losing her and I was mad. I was so irritated with them at the time. Like I felt so needing to go and spend time with them and be drawn up to, you know, I was running my own business at the time. Like, I was really frustrated with all the time and effort and the fact that I wasn't getting anything back from them. And the letters became this like portal to understanding, and it shifted everything. And it started my journey of writing, but it also shifted the way that I related to her, which was also the writing journey too. But in being able to see her and feel her and hear her, while we were losing, like, we were really like in it, like she was really confused and she was forgetting and she'd get mad at us. But I was able to still see her, which then gave me permission to experience and be way more present with her as we navigated the last half.
Right.
And I was able to meet her and match her and be available for her and my dad in a different way.
Is Alzheimer's hereditary?
Good question. Yes and no.
Okay.
Yes, probably we're all gonna, both my cousins and my brother and I are kind of worried. however, like cancer, there's mm-hmm. so many factors. So there are some strains of Alzheimer's that are absolutely like DNA, you know, gene related. Uh-huh. That you can test for, and you can like really specifically delve into it. And you know, my brother's done the 23andMe test and whatever, and he's like, yeah, we're probably gonna get it, Jess. So we're like, you know, we're leading to, we may have it. I've not done the full-on, do you have the Alzheimer's dementia test? I think mm-hmm. there's so many other factors that come involved. There's, if you, any test or any, as you start to, you know, do research, everything can lead to some kind of cancer or some form of Alzheimer's.
Like, right.
You know, like, you know, my mom and my aunt grew up in a small town in Southern Virginia. There is a chemical plant down the street. Who knows? My mom and she, my mom knew something was going on with her. She didn't like to talk about it. She, before even Alzheimer's was on the table that any of us were talking about, she was pretty conscious of her health and herself. And she, had started to explore and started to really delve deep into thinking or connecting MSG and an MSG sensitivity mm-hmm. To memory, or to, she described it as having like a foggy head or fuzzy, or almost like, I mean, if like some of the conversations, like if you wake in the, like if you back in college, when you woke up and you had a hangover the next day, that fuzzy feeling. Right. Like so that was sort of how it sounded like when she would describe it. Mm-hmm. But the funny thing happened, and, you know, and the funny thing is, I think, you know, now like my daughter has a sensitivity to celiac and to gluten. Like, you know, we, like my mom, she was kind of cutting edge. She was thinking about that stuff sometimes, I think, before the rest of us were. And she, I think she probably did have a sensitivity to MSG. But the funny thing was, then she would start attributing other things. Like one day something didn't bother her, but then mm-hmm. the next day it did. So it was not consistent mm-hmm. with what, like she would like eat something that was really processed, and she would right. be like, oh, and you know, I know that too, right? Like if you eat something really salty, you get, you know, my fingers swell up and everything.
Right. Yeah.
But then it started to be things that were not affecting her. Then suddenly, like they, you know, one day coffee was fine, and the next day coffee had an MSG in it. And I was like, mom, I don't think that's not mm-hmm. tracking anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I say that all the time. Are we tracking? That wasn't tracking. You know, right. The reason why I asked you, was it hereditary, was because you were talking about how your grandma had the letters of your mom. And it made that, and in other words, that became your connection point back to who she was, or actually is. I'm wondering, would that be helpful for other families? Perhaps someone's listening to us right now, Jessica, that are struggling like you were, you know, you're losing your loved one right before your eyes, although they're still physically here with you, they hadn't transitioned yet. But is there anything that we can do in the interim to kind of house our voice?
Sure.
For our families. Like I know, like my voice is in Courageous Conversations with Sheree. If I was to close my eyes tonight and go straight to heaven, my kids, my grandkids, my kids, could come back and connect to the energy, the source of what makes me me.
Absolutely. You know what I mean? I love that. I love that. Yeah. And you're so right. You know, and I think that I think that, you know, and it was letters, and part mm-hmm. of that was this, you know, I think that there's so much, like, there's such, you know, technology is amazing, right?
Right.
Like now it's doing a, you know, TikToks or whatever, right?
Right,
like,
exactly.
But it was interesting because the letters, and this was interesting, right? That the letters spanned until my grandparents were not letter writing anymore. They were close enough that mom was talking to them on the phone. And this was, again, you know, this was pre, you know, cell phone long distance plans.
Right.
And, you know, I think of all the times in which, like, I had conversations with my mom, or I have conversations with my kids, and we don't record the conversations, right? Uh-huh. Uh-huh. So the coolest thing, and I think probably the next closest would be email, right? Like, because there is, or like if you're recording video conversations, I think, but for listeners and for any of us, like, man, write it down. Like, write your daughter, write your son, write your partner a letter, right? Or a text or a email. Just record a video and send it to them,
right? You know? We used to have, especially with my children, we used to have the, what is it, VCR tapes,
VHS.
We used to have those when we recorded stuff. We don't do that anymore. Now, granted, everybody carries their own cell phone. You can capture video there, but capture your voice, I think, is what we're trying to say, Savannah. Capture the essence of who you are, because guess what? Life is a vapor.
Yes. Yes. And that's that, and such an interesting lesson that was that second half of our journey. And, and I explored a lot in my writing and in the book, was that enjoy the minute, the moment, because it can go away.
Oh yeah.
And even the things that irritated me, so many things irritated me over the journey with my mom and I, you know, so many things. Like, like there was this whole thing, she got totally, and this is totally a common thing with Alzheimer's, there's a sense of like some kind of delusion and some sort of like, you know, and it's a wonderful excuse. The reason why the jewelry went missing, the reason why she lost her shoes, was because the mice stole them. And she was convinced the mice in the house were taking her stuff. And, you know, and I used to argue with her, and I was like, no, mom, it's not, or not argue, but I would try to convince her that no, it was not the mice, and that she just put them down someplace. Mm-hmm. And she would get mad, and, you know, she was convinced that it was the mice. Man, I wish I could go back to those conversations and be like, you're right, mom. It's the mice.
Just let her have it. Did you find that, or is it true that they recall various stages or seasons in their life, like perhaps in their childhood? Is that real?
Well, I think it's different with everybody. I will say that as my mom got into later stages, she, I think I look a lot like my grandma, and I look a lot like, well, there are two things. My brother looks a lot like my dad did. And there was a time in which she was really mad, and she was irritated, and she was like, she did not want to engage with me. I think she thought that I was just like a caregiver that was helping her, and she was mad at the caregivers, but she loved connecting with my brother. My brother is here for a weekend. My brother lives in a different state. He lives in Philadelphia, and she was here, or he was here, and she was so engaged with him, and she was so excited to see him, and she was so like interested in him. But at the very end, and a lot of people say that Alzheimer's, or and certainly there's some people that just forget about you. She certainly did not know our names. She actually stopped talking for the last few years of her life. But she knew that we were her people. When she was in a memory care facility the last 2 years of her life. And when my dad would come, or when I would come, she knew us. She would get a smile on her face. And there was one visit in which I was there. She was just so excited to see me.
Yeah.
And she was just smiles and holding my hand and just so happy. And,
right.
And that it was so clear to me that I don't know if she knew I was her daughter, but she knew I was someone that was important. And she hadn't seen me in a while. It was the middle of pandemic. Like we were like breaking in to that facility. Yeah. But it was really cool because I felt so validated that she still
could see me. Yeah. Wow. Well, Savannah, we're going to take a quick break. We jumped right into this conversation today. I'm on again with Miss Jessica Stokes, and we're talking about the brand new book, Seeking Clarity in the Labyrinth, A Daughter's Journey Through Alzheimer's. Wow. I know there are several people out there that's listening to us that can certainly relate and identify with this story. We're going to jump back as I am buzzing with more questions just for you, my darling. So hold tight, Savannah. We'll be right back with you.
This meeting is being recorded.
And we are back. You're listening to another episode of Courageous Conversations with Sheree. I am on with Jessica Stokes. We are having a blast, Savannah, and we hope you are too. We're going to jump back into this because we were asking you, actually, I think impressing upon you to actually capture your voice, and how you do that is not prescriptive. You have to find what, you know, resonates deeply with you. We gave you certainly some ideas, writing it down, journaling, taking some videos, you know what I mean? Make it a text. However you need to do that, do it. Don't miss the opportunity. And there's so many ways to do it today, Jessica.
Right. I hope
that they would do it. Do that. So we talked a little bit about why you wrote this book, and we're talking about your journey. I can imagine how heartbreaking that is, though, you know?
Yeah, it's interesting. And, you know, you said it earlier, and there was very specific dates that I picked to release the book. I started writing the book, and, you know, she was still well in we were still dealing with it. Some of the sections of the book were almost written in real time. Like I was doing a lot of writing through my grief, and through our loss. And there's an interesting thing that happens, because it was also incredibly healing. So as I was capturing things and, you know, and an element of journaling it, and trying to capture it or tell the story or make it so it is readable, not just the chicken scratches in a journal, which sometimes my journal, I can't even reread my journal sometimes when I go back and try to read it. I'm not worried about my kids someday, like reading things that I don't want them to read because they, you know, won't be able to read it. But there was a healing that happened in writing through it and capturing and really delving into it. I mean, certainly the loss is there.
Do you think it's because you embedded yourself in the process of it instead of standing like outside of it?
Yeah.
Like you were a part of it. I mean, it was up close and personal for you.
Yeah. Yeah. And I there was definitely that, and it wasn't just mom. We lost my aunt and my uncle in the midst of that whole thing. I was with them both, or was with my uncle when he passed. And with very close to my mom when she died. I'm apparently pretty good at being close to people when they die. And you know, that's an interesting thing in itself, right? Like being around, and you know, right? You lost your mom.
Was right there.
And it's there's a funny thing that actually happens at someone's end of life.
Yeah.
It's sad. Of course it's sad. My mom was, we were losing my mom. But it was a gift too.
Absolutely. Yes. I was going to say that. It was absolute. Actually, I lost my dad January 29th last year. So I just celebrated 1 year of his transition. And I was able to be with him at the end of his life. And then, of course, I took the last two steps in my mother's room. And when I did, she took her last breath.
I love that.
I was able to get one last warm kiss, close her eyes, and that was that. And I'd do it all over again if I had the opportunity to.
Yep. Yes.
So, yeah, I believe what you just said about, I think it takes a very special person or a different strength to be able to be there when someone's transitioning.
Yes.
I saw it as an absolute gift. Absolutely.
Yeah. And, you know, honestly, my mom taught me that.
Really?
A very, very long time ago when I was just a small child of 8. My cat, which is funny that my cat is walking across our screen right now. A different cat, not the same cat. Obviously.
Right.
It is a gift. There's this interesting thing, and it's, you know, not to be a bubble burster in the, you know, Savannah, I'm sorry that this is good, just went dark. but not really, because here it is. Life is, you know, there's ups and downs of life. There is the high highs and there's the low lows. There is something about that yin and yang. There's goodness and there's darkness, right? Mm. Like life is not, we're all like, the end journey is, we're all gonna eventually die.
Exactly.
Like, by the way, that's gonna happen to us all.
Exactly. So, I think we can be empowered though, Jessica, and we can hopefully through this conversation today, we are doing just that, empowering people instead of them. And I am probably going to sound insensitive. I don't mean it that way, but instead of people freaking out at the end of life, I like to see people empowered.
Absolutely.
And have a whole different 100%. Perspective.
100%. Yeah. And embrace it.
Yeah.
Because it's not going away.
Right.
Like it's not. And so this is my story and it's in my book. So, so I'm 8 years old. My, cat is dying. We know my cat's dying. And my mom says to me that morning, and in hindsight, and as my mom was dying or in the process of this, I have a different perspective. I'm pretty sure that my mom was going to take the cat that day to be put down. That's probably what was happening. But she said to me, came down for breakfast and she said, you need to say goodbye to your cat because she's probably going to die today. And I thought, I had this funny, and I don't know if it was just then or when I, and then I went and was with the cat was in this like little box and, you know, in this space. And I was petting the cat and I was saying goodbye to my cat. And then I also had this real, and the cat died like right there with me.
Okay.
And took the cat's last breath. I feel like I felt and saw the cat spirit or energy or whatever you want to call it, soul, whatever, the essence that was the cat. Leave. I felt like physically I could feel and see leave.
Mm-hmm.
And I had these two feelings at the exact same time. And it's exactly what you said. I was sad because I was losing my cat. And I was so happy and grateful that my cat was out of pain, that my cat was able to let go and be energy, be spirit, be whatever, wherever cat spirit souls go. But it taught me this really interesting lesson that I think followed me so many times in my life, that you can have two very juxtaposing different feelings at the exact same time.
Mm.
You can feel sad and you can feel happy in the exact moment.
Wow.
Because that's what that cat needed at that time. The cat needed to die. And I've been with, and then I was with my grandpa in my 20s when he died, and my uncle and close with my aunt, and then with my mom. And there's such similar feelings for me of the such gratitude that they let go and they move on. And it's such a gift to be able to witness that.
You know, something I've been saying often is the greatest or the fastest route to healing is acceptance.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I've had to live that quite a bit where, yes, this event, circumstance, situation is here. This is happening, right? We're not naive. We're not delusional. This is really happening. So you right. acknowledge that, right?
Right.
And then when you get to the point of acceptance, I believe that's how you can process the healing or initiate it faster. That's what yeah. I've had to do personally
yeah.
with the losses that I've experienced. And it is a mental shift.
Yeah.
For yes. others, they struggle. For I've watched my siblings struggle, like super struggle, you know, where I feel like, was something wrong with me? How was I able to handle it? I'm the youngest, right? How was I able to handle all this the way I have? And yeah. and honestly be okay.
Right, right. And I think that's that. I think you're onto something, because when you accept something,
yeah,
then you can move into, because if you're fighting, accepting and not wanting and uh-huh. being angry or mad or
trying to control it,
you can't actually move to accepting and then being, I mean, because really once you accept it, then yeah. you can really move to feeling it and feeling the mm-hmm. grief and feeling mm-hmm. the loss.
Yeah.
But you can't yeah. really get there until you accept it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I guess yeah. I just think through it critically, you know, and try to yeah. make rationalize it as well. Not, I don't know. It's hard to explain because you're right. You're absolutely right. And it's not that you can just have two types of emotions at the same time. You can have multiple at the same time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that
and is it's okay.
That, and that does move us. And that's that, like, and, you know, I mean, obviously their emotions are complex, right? Like, you know, there's nothing like true. Like, it's not like you're just feeling like there's like, you know, there's a million different ways to kiss like an Eskimo. There's a million different ways to, right? There's like, there's a million different like emotions are so complicated.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they're so multifaceted. And, you know, I think that any journey.
Yeah.
You know, and it's sometimes, I think there's a sense of us trying to distill it or to make it like clear of like, this is a path you go from point A, B to C. And, you know, there's a lot of twists and turns and curves on
absolutely.
That.
Yeah. You know? No straight lines. You're right.
Yeah. Yeah.
How did you do it? I know for me, I had to get to a point of acceptance, but how did you honestly do it? That was a lot.
Well, I think some of it was finding those darn letters, right? Like and using the labyrinth. So, you know, yeah. I was walking the labyrinth a lot. I was spending a lot of time. There was some significant shift with my parents. There was a very clear, significant shift of me being daughter to moving to being, I don't know if I would say parent, because I don't feel like a parent to them. I give my dad a lot of credit. He did a lot of growth during this.
Yeah.
He
yeah.
lost his best friend and his partner and they were very close. He had a lot of anxiety about living alone and thinking that he could be without her. And he fought me a lot. He wasn't physically fighting me. He pushed back. He wanted to give her the integrity and the space. He didn't yeah. want to undermine her. He right. wanted her to still own her. He didn't want her to feel bad. And in doing so, he became a little complicit of us not moving forward, yet we still moved forward.
Right.
I think I used, how did I do it? I used writing. Writing actually helped me a lot. Finding her, seeing, realizing I was bad. My mom was like my best friend. My 20s and 30s, my mom was my best friend.
Yeah.
And I was really sad about losing that. Mm-hmm. My dad and I are very close now. We're closer than we were. And he's, to his credit, he's great. He will talk to me a lot. Like, I used to talk to my mom a lot on the phone. So that's cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think there's that sense of stopping and finding that, still finding the spaces and the things that bring me joy and gratitude, you know, and it's sometimes it's the little things. It's the, you know, seeing that beautiful, like experiencing the beautiful changes in the weather, even when they're annoying. You know, like the looking up in the sky and being like, oh my gosh, that's a really beautiful sunset, or I'm so glad it's a full moon, or wow, the flowers are blooming, or finding the little.
So there was a sense of gratitude. You did have a sense of gratitude throughout that too. Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't know. I mean, sometimes I look back and I'm like, wow, how did I do that? It sucked.
Were you conscientious of your own health and self?
Yeah. I mean, I think it is that self-care and that health and that, like, you know, finding places and times to exercise, finding places and times to like know when to take a break if you needed to, right. You know, my partner and I, my husband, we got married. Well, Savannah, now you're going to get a few little interesting tidbits in my personal life. So here you go. My kid's dad and I separated when my kids were pretty little. And I had been dating my now husband. We dated for a very long time. And we have a really traditional, good, like, date night on Saturday nights. And we, you know, go out and we either go to dinner or a movie or just make sure we're together. And some of those sacred moments, those like that sacred time in which, and it's not like, it doesn't have to be fancy or anything, but it's just like time in which we were being clear to us was really important because I made sure that that kept happening. And that was, you know, kept me sane for sure. Snuggling with my cat, you know, not the one that died when I was 8, but
we got it.
But just cooking a good meal and then finding some things that reminded me. I remember there was this one time and we were in it, like, it, you know, again, it was like, I don't know, probably 9 or 10 years into it. Like, it was well into it. And I was cooking dinner one night and I was remembering all the things and the great things that my mom used to make and cook and love and how mm-hmm. she so loved that. And rather than being mad that she couldn't do it with me or sad, because there was times that it was that, like, there was times, right. Like, there was one time that I was like somehow inherited the Thanksgiving meal. And I was like, oh my gosh, really? I have to do this. But I was cooking one night and I was enjoying myself and I was enjoying the process and I was enjoying the whatever, the chopping, the sauteing, whatever I was doing with the cooking. But I was just remembering how she would find joy in that. And then that became a gift. So finding things that were gifts and not being resentful that I lose. So that's that acceptance thing that you're talking about.
Yeah. Do you feel like, I know it was a 13-year journey, but you also mentioned, you know, you published this book on the anniversary, 1-year anniversary of your mom's passing. Does it feel like 1 year? Does it feel like 14?
That's a great question. That's a great question. Yeah. You know, I had been doing a lot of writing up until, and I was kind of trying to figure out how to end my book.
Yeah.
And she died. And mm-hmm. I was like, there it is. That's the ending. She dies.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, that sound, talk about like trying to not sound crass, but, and there was definitely one of the things that was the hardest was, I thought we were prepared. We had said goodbye so many different times. Mm-hmm. We had lost so many versions of her. I in my book, I speak to it as like the shedding of a snake skin. So when snakes shed, and I have reptiles, so besides cats, I have a snake. And when my snake sheds her skin, it's like she's reborn. She has this new like energy about her. And she's like, oh, look at me. I'm new and I have new skin. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and sometimes it's like this perfect replicate of her, because she'll just shed out of her skin. And mom, we lost her so many times, and differently than the snake shedding, and she got a new version. We got a new version of her. It wasn't always this brand new, like beautiful version, but it was a new version. And we would adapt. And my dad was so good at adapting to new versions, really good at it.
Yeah.
And we would, or we'd lose, or we would talk about, or we would remember those other versions that we lost. So I thought at the end, and we knew it was coming. We knew it was coming. And, but it sucked. It was so hard. Like the actual physical loss of her was so hard, and I didn't realize it. And I got really, there was some tremendous grief that happened at the end of last year, or a year ago. And I got really, I had to really do some work on myself. Mm-hmm. And I did some, a few different, kind of some pointed, some work with some therapists and some different stuff of like some energy work and some stuff that like to shift what was happening.
Right.
And to truly accept that loss,
mm-hmm.
that final loss.
So it sounds like even when we think we're prepared, you don't necessarily have to be.
Yeah. Yeah. So
it's still a human experience.
Right. And then that gift of, and you know, it's interesting, that day the book came out was this two things happened. One was I was sad. I was sad. Yeah. It was marking. There's a Jewish tradition of lighting a candle. You light a candle for 24 hours. It's called a yahrzeit candle. And it's a 24-hour can burns for exactly 24 hours. And so I lit one and I let myself really feel her too. And really let myself grieve.
Right. That's important.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very important.
Yeah. And then I celebrated too, because the gift that keeps giving, and that thing we started this conversation with of that, how you take something that's sad. Losing my mom was, you know, one of the saddest things that's ever happened. She was my best friend.
Right.
But taking that story and transforming it into a story and into this, to the book, to help others, to help myself, mm-hmm. to have for a legacy for my family, is so special. And it does make me feel like she's walking with me in it.
That's beautiful. That's amazing. She's super proud of you. Absolutely. That's cool. So what's next? You've done this. It's been a year.
So
what's next?
So I do run a business. We could have another whole conversation about the business I run. So there's that. But there's also, because of the book, I also put together it kind of like birthed out of the book, But there is a presentation or class or an event in which walking people within the labyrinth. So there's a using the labyrinth in grief and or to navigate with Alzheimer's specifically, but dementia or anything, cancer, anything. Right. So I have some events planned that we've got in the Salida area. We've got quite a few, enough that there's a walking group. So we're going to do a couple walks within the labyrinth. And then I'm speaking at a dementia conference in Colorado Alzheimer's Association Dementia Conference in March. So there's some things that are connected that are creating some new ways to continue to speak about this and use the book and use our experience to help connect and hopefully help people continue to grieve and find their own voice and find their own space in their journeys.
I love it. Absolutely beautiful. Listen, I know Savannah is blessed for having heard your story today or a portion of it. We're going to read a passage out of it, but I think you hit on some of them in our discussion today. We're just talking about the shedding of the skin, like the snake and the different versions of mom. But how do people get their hands on this book or get in touch with you?
Sure. So it's available on Amazon and on Barnes & Noble. And Sheree's done a great job of reminding everyone the name, but it's Seeking Clarity in the Labyrinth, A Daughter's Journey Through Alzheimer's. And my website is a great resource for any information about labyrinths as well as Alzheimer's. There's some great links and some great tools on the website, as well as any other events that I have planned, both podcasts and different things such as that. The website is jessicastokesauthor.com.
jessicastokesauthor.com. You heard it here on WRUU with this fabulous lady. Jessica, please, before we get off the air, why don't you speak to the hearts and minds and certainly the souls of those that may have this challenge upon them right now, dealing with a loved one with dementia or Alzheimer's or some type of significant loss? What would you say to them?
So this is the same thing that if I could give my earlier advice to myself from 15 years ago, be present, enjoy every single minute of it. It's going to change. And just see your person for who they are now. Don't try to make them into who they were or who they're going to be right now, right in the moment, and enjoy that. Be with that and match whatever they need. Hold their hand, hug them, give them space, but just be with them.
Be there. That is so beautiful, my darling. Thank you so much for being fully present with us today. This has been absolutely amazing. Love right back to you and your beautiful kitty. Savannah, that's another episode of Courageous Conversations with Sheree. I want to remind you that the viewpoints expressed in the preceding program were not necessarily that of WRUU, its staff, or its license holder. And until next week, Savannah, take care.